maybe he did.
All right, welcome back to day two of the Gospel According to Harry Potter. We talked about just kind of yesterday, recapping if you shouldn't be, but if you just jumped in for whatever reason. Yesterday we talked about why we should be reading Harry Potter and why it's good. In fact, if you still haven't read it or you want to read it again, when we talked about the book table, I wasn't sure when he asked me what books I was using to prepare for this. I was like, well, the whole Harry Potter series. And so he has all of the Harry Potter books out there if you want, if you don't have one. So you can go get one of those. But today and from and today and on Friday when we meet again, we're going to look at one thing in particular, not just kind of the gamut. And so we're trying to look at one of the major overarching themes of the whole book series, of the whole series of Harry Potter. And I think two major themes that stood out to me as I reread them this last month. And that was fun, and lots of work. Right, because they start out with a nice little 300-page book, then go to an 800-page book. One of the main things I feel like that stands out amongst all of them is there's the theme of the power of love versus the love of power. And we see those all throughout the book series. And we see it all right in the very beginning of the love of power versus the power of love. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Before we get there, we want to look at this man, this thing. This is so creepy and cool at the same time. Who is this? Don't say his name. That is Lord Voldemort. All right? Lord Voldemort wasn't always Lord Voldemort. He was once a little boy named Tom Riddle, which is, this actor plays this creepy boy so well, I think, of all the Tom Riddles. Tom was a troubled orphan, right? Like Harry, he was an orphan. But he wasn't the sweethearted one. He was the one that was also torturing other kids and bringing them to scary caves and torturing them. He's a psychopath. But very young, Dumbledore, in his, even at the cost of himself, always trying to believe the best in people, came to Tom Riddle and saw the potential that he had and recruited him to Hogwarts, to bring him in. Even though he could see there's a lot going on with him that was wrong, but he had the potential. And he said, you know what, maybe we can teach you to hone this. And so he brings him to Hogwarts, and he learns and becomes one of the greatest, most powerful wizards of all time. Now, we say great in the sense that he was powerful. You can think of other great leaders in the world that were also evil, but they were great because of what they could do. But Tom didn't always stay Tom, right? He became Lord Voldemort, right? That's how he got his name. Tom Marvolo Riddle moves into the Lord Voldemort that he created to kind of separate himself, to give himself a new identity. And Lord Voldemort turns himself into something freaky deaky, this man before you. Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Just wake up looking at that every morning. That is frightening. That actor also plays Voldemort so well. Freaky person. But let's just not talk about his power. Let's see it. This is one of my favorite scenes in terms of seeing the power of Voldemort versus Dumbledore.
I'll be dead.
In the first book, we find out that Lord Voldemort, in all of his glory, all of his power, is taken down, is reduced to this weird little thing by the power of love. And it's not until Harry returns back to Hogwarts that Lord Voldemort makes his reappearance, right? And he attaches himself to Professor Quirrell, and he hides him under a turban, which is the weirdest thing in the world. Like, when he turns himself around, you see his head talking from behind. It's very creepy, but creative. Very creative. But we get a sense of Lord Voldemort and Professor Quirrell's philosophy when, at the end, Quirrell says, "A foolish young man I was then, full of ridiculous ideas about good and evil. Lord Voldemort showed me how wrong I was. There is no good and evil. There is only power in those too weak to seek it." That's a very, very, very dark way of seeing the world. There is no good and evil. There's no right and wrong. There's only those with power and those too weak to seek it. Meaning, only thing that matters is if you can do it, then do it. And the only thing that's stopping you from murdering someone is whether or not you can do it. I mean, this is dark. There is no room for mercy, there's no room for grace, there's no room for love in this worldview, in this way of thinking. But on the other hand, if you don't believe there's no good, or there's no right and wrong, there's no punishments for your actions and no rewards, then this is almost like the right way to think. Like, if you think this is true, that there is no good and evil, then why not live that way? Because there is no heaven, there is no hell. All that matters is here and now, and so it's really the process of evolution, like, to its fullest extent. Kill or be killed. And therefore you just lose any forms of love and hope and grace. I mean, all the people that we want to protect and care for, I mean, they'd be gone, right? But they might be weak and not able to protect themselves. They would be gone. But all villains and deceptive philosophies don't come out that strongly and say things like that, right? Most villains and that we meet in the world and in these books don't say, "Alert, I'm the bad guy." Like, Lord Voldemort is clear. Raging psychopath, bad guy. Like, that one was obvious. But some of these other ones are not as obvious. Like Professor Quirrell. Who knew he was the bad guy when you first read Harry Potter? You heard his stuttering, "Harry Potter," and you're like, "Oh, poor guy." Like, you felt sorry for him. And he becomes the one who's actually trying to kill Harry Potter. What about Scabbers the Rat? Did you know Scabbers the Rat was evil? Now, rats in general are evil. But Scabbers the Rat was not Scabbers the Rat. Who was Scabbers the Rat? Or Wormtail. Yeah, Peter Pettigrew or Wormtail. This evil little man. J.K. Rowling says, "You have a choice when you're going to introduce a very evil character. You can dress a guy up with loads of ammunition, put a black Stetson on him, and say, 'Bad guy, shoot him.'" And she says, "I'm writing about shades of evil. You have Voldemort, a raging psychopath devoid of the normal human responses to other people's suffering, and there are people like that in the world. But then you have Wormtail, who out of cowardice will stand in the shadow of the strongest person. And what's very important for me is when Dumbledore says that you have to choose between what is right and what is easy. And this is the setup for the next three books. This is obviously in, while she's writing it. All of them are going to have to choose because what is easy is often not right. I love that. She says, I'm writing about shades of evil. And she shows the darkest evil with Voldemort, and I think the Dementors would be in that category. But she shows the shades of evil, the progressions of evil, and the forms of evil that are out there. And I think a lot of times we think, you know, I'm all right. I'm pretty good. Like, I haven't murdered anyone. I've actually not started wars. I haven't broken relationships. I haven't killed animals. I'm not that evil. But there are shades of evil that you might find on the scale there, like Wormtail. Like, that might be you. Now, you may not be Lord Voldemort, but out of cowardice, will stand in the shadow of the strongest person around you and follow them. That's frightening. And what happens when that happens, what that looks like is, maybe I don't stand up for others. Maybe I laugh at others' faults and failings and weaknesses. And maybe it looks like I just don't fight sin anymore. I just give into it. And there's shades of evil, like, I'm not evil, I'm not that bad, but it's on the progression, on the spectrum towards it. And so, what this is, the Bible tells us is that we are all these wolves in sheep's clothing. We look like Christians, but we're wolves and monsters and darkness underneath. We have crooked souls. It's not just that we're like broken, and we are broken people, but we're also torqued, and we're the ones inciting evil in people, and hurting and progressing the sin in this world. And so here's what I want to ask you. Do I love people or do I love control? Which one? Do you love people or do you love control? That's the difference in these books. And that's the difference when we say the love of power versus the power of love. And the answer to that question is whether you're a Death Eater or not, by the way. Do I love people or do I love control? What does the love of power or the love of control look like? We've heard, you may have heard, in Harry Potter there is this prophecy given but made by Sybil Trelawney to Albus Dumbledore at the Hogshead Pub, and she tells this prophecy of a boy, of a baby, who will overtake him, right? That who has the power to defeat the great Lord Voldemort, a baby. And there's thoughts at the time, maybe it was Neville Longbottom, right? He could have been Harry Potter. They were born at the same time. It was like Jesus and John the Baptist. Who knows which one they were for what? And similarly, what happens when the tyrant hears of a baby trying to usurp them? The tyrant then goes out and tries to kill the kids. The one who has all the power in the world wants to murder the most powerless thing in the world. And so we see that with Moses, we see that with Jesus, and we see that here, where Lord Voldemort goes out to kill Harry Potter and his whole family. And so we see Tom Riddle, this boy, in his quest for control, control over life himself, the control that I don't want anything to upset me, says, I will be willing to sacrifice anyone, whole families of people, including babies, to protect myself. Right? It's dark. But that's the difference. Do you love control? Are you willing to sacrifice anything to keep it? Who here loves control? I think no one loves to be out of control, right? You love control, but who here, like, loves control? You've got your calendar planned out. You know exactly. You're really happy with our booklet that have like everything that we're doing this week. The free time kills you because you're like, but what are we doing? Right? We're not saying you're dead here because of that. But when you want all control of all of the world that you now have power over it, That's when we start seeing the difference here. Because what happens there is it usually works like this. I need control, and therefore I'm willing to do anything to get it. I'm willing to sacrifice anything to be in control and to be the one in power of this. And so, you know, take it like, I need an A. I need to have the grades. I need to be straight student. I need to be top 10%, maybe top 5%. Maybe I need to be valedictorian. I need that, and therefore I'm willing to sacrifice anything to get it. I'm willing to sacrifice church. I'm willing to sacrifice relationships with people. I'm willing to sacrifice my own morals and revert to cheating. Right? If I need that, I will do anything to get it because I have to have that. That's that I love control. Or maybe it's like this. Maybe it's your image isn't what you want it to be. And therefore, as you want control, I have to control it. And therefore, I don't eat. Or if I do eat, I make sure I throw it back up. Or maybe it's the opposite. You feel like your life is completely out of control and food is an escape, and you escape into that. Right, there's different ways of this. What about with relationships? I want to be known by this guy or girl. I need it. I want to control it, so I'll do anything to get that person's attention. Or even not even just a relationship like a romantic one. What if you just wanted to be known as cooler than you are? And therefore, I will not be associated with someone who's lower than me. Think about that in your youth groups. Can I really talk to them and people see that I love these people? That's tough because you realize you're now giving up this social capital that you thought you had. And people are going, why are you talking to them? Absolutely do that. Love people or do you want control? Well, what is this all talking about? This is all coming down to this, and I think this is what this is. It comes down to will come up here. Me before you. That's what control is. What is control? Control is me before you. No matter what, I matter more than you is what control is. That's what Voldemort believes. I matter more than you, right? Even more than all of his followers and deputies. I matter more than you. Control is this beast that we see from the very beginning of the Harry Potter series, right? It begins with Harry Potter's scar, right? And it's this weird image, this lightning bolt image that's kind of become iconic as like his Superman symbol. Like you see it and you're like, Harry. And when he first goes, everyone's just like, it's Harry Potter, can I see your scar? And he doesn't know anything about it. It happened when he was a kid, and his adopted parents won't have anything to do with it and won't have anything to talk about with it. And so when he gets there, people ask him, I think it has something to do with the death of my parents. And so this, when he finds out what it is, this image that people are like, it's your image, it's like the bat signal, the lightning bolt. It's an image of like the hero, but at the same time, it's this image of immense suffering to him. Does he want to talk about the death of his parents? Every time they ask him, he kind of shares as much as he does, but yeah, let's talk about that. But that's Lord Voldemort saying, me before you. I will kill your whole family to save my own life. And this is the opposite of what Paul writes in Philippians 2:3. Philippians 2:3 is beautiful. It says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. And so I think Voldemort flips this on its head and says, do everything from selfish ambition and conceit. In pride, count me more significant than you. This is the deadly version of the Bible. This is how I think we all functionally live. We all functionally live this out. I'm more significant than you because I am. It's me, right? It turned out that Harry had been protected by a charm, right? And Voldemort could not understand. What is it? Love. Love is the downfall of Voldemort. and all of his power. And all that remained of that failed curse was this lightning bolt scar forever. And I love Dumbledore says, scars can come in handy. I have one myself above my left knee. It was a perfect match of the London Underground. Not a tattoo, but a scar. Don't know how that would happen. But scars, they mark suffering, right? Any of you guys have scars? Maybe you want to share? Yeah, you have to share. Okay. Some of you guys have scars. Sometimes you're like, so embarrassing. Other times, like a lot of guys are like, oh, that's awesome. I have to get through stuff. Scars mark suffering, but they can be an avenue through which something useful happens. It's kind of the theme this week that God is at work, right? That the scars actually mark something very painful in your life, but they can be an avenue through which God is actually working, right? Harry Gross defined the scars much more than a bragging right. There's this physical and mental connection to Voldemort. And so Harry, despite himself, is living in communion with his darkest foe. He has these dreams of him killing people. It is kind of him killing people, because he's been connected with Voldemort. He's a part of it. Voldemort has put himself in them, inside of him. At the same time, this point of immense suffering, this image of like immense self-centeredness, I'm going to kill a baby, is met with immeasurable sacrifice. We'll look at it a little bit more tomorrow, but at the end of the first movie, Dumbledore explains to Harry what happens. That there is a power stamped beneath his skin, which was the love of his mother. That there's actually power in his scar, and it's the love of his mother. And so regardless of Harry's own strength, regardless of a little baby boy that can't stand for him, protect himself, regardless of Harry, even in this image, when he hasn't yet even learned anything to do with the wand, he is protected by the power of the death of another. Doesn't that sound like something we believe? That we are protected by the power of a death of another. This is what's called imputed love. It's been inserted, injected, you can think of it like with a needle. Imputed love has been put into you to protect you. And so Dumbledore says, your mother sacrificed herself for you. And that kind of act leaves a mark. This kind of mark cannot be seen. It lives in your very skin. Love, Harry. Love. Throughout the entirety of the Harry Potter series, that this power, this love, is the only cure to the immense suffering that Harry Potter experiences. It's the only power that can actually kill Lord Voldemort. Like, love is the only thing that's protecting him, it's the only power that's saving him, and it is a power. He says here, you would be protected by an ancient magic of which he knows, which he despises, and which he has always therefore underestimated to his cost. I'm speaking, of course, of the fact that your mother died to save you. She gave you a lingering protection he never expected, a protection that flows in your veins to this day. I put my trust, therefore, in your mother's blood. Man. I mean, in Harry Potter, you have this contrast. The love of power, meaning the power of love, right? That there's a sacrificial death of another. It's his mother dying for him to save him. And that is just rich, rich theology. Harry Potter is full of rich theology, which is why we say, I believe it's good, which is why we have it on the book table, right? We want you to be reading rich theology, and it comes in the form of Harry Potter. That love sacrifices itself for another. And this is why I want you to believe, love is death. Love is death. Not jokingly, if you understand what true love is, it is always death. It is always sacrificing yourself. It's death to yourself to lift someone else up. So if you love someone, you die to yourself, you die to your own wants and own needs, and say, I will serve you because I love you. Love is death. Love says, not me over you. The love says you over me. I will die so that you can live. And Raleigh beautifully illustrates this with Harry's mother saying, I will take the abacadabra curse, right? I will take the killing curse for you. I will be murdered for you because love is death. Because I value you more than me. This sounds a lot like Matthew 16. Whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. If you say, I live for me and me alone, you're going to lose it. But if I say, I live for you and I live for him, then you save your life. You give it away freely. And so this is what I want to say. Selfishness is not just an annoying trait. You may know some selfish people, and usually they're in the mirror, right? Selfishness is not just an annoying trait. Selfishness is being a death eater. If you're selfish, you're a death eater. It says, Dumbledore says, it's easy, but not right. We have to choose between what is right and what is easy. And death, dying to yourself, is never easy. Saying, I will sacrifice myself for you is never easy. Looking out for me is easy. Looking out for others is hard. If you're married, you know this is true. Love is death. Not because it's bad, but because before, when you hit college, you had a lot more freedom. And in college, you, maybe not even now, maybe you don't have as much freedom now, but in college, you get to pick when you eat, where you eat, when you sleep. You get to pick all the, like, you know what, today I'm supposed to play video games for 8 hours. At that point, you feel like you have all this freedom. When you get married to someone, you die to yourself, so you can say, you know what, I care about you, I want to know what you want to do. I want to go where you want to eat. There is a death that is involved in there. If you have kids, love is death. Even more so. Any of that free time you thought you had is now for them. It's not to be bitter about it. Like, I don't want to say this as a negative thing, but I really want to enjoy them, and I really want to go blow bubbles with them. I wouldn't go blow bubbles by myself. That would be weird, right? I want to go have fun with my boys because love is dying to myself. And it's saying, I want to die to myself to see your desires fulfilled. And so if you're in a relationship right now and you think, they love me, but they seem to only care about themselves. That may not be love. In fact, I'll just say it's not love. If you're in a relationship and you say, really, I'm the leader of this and only what I want goes, that's not love. All right? Love is death. Caring for the preferences of others. What about in your youth group? How do you die yourself to love people in your youth group? To love them. To die yourself to actually love them. This is what Paul's actually talking about from Philippians 2. To do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility, count others, even if they're not, count others more significant than yourselves. I am counting you more important and more valuable than me. You are precious in my eyes because I love you, even if you're not. But you're counting them, is what it tells us to do. That is the power of love. And it's literally a power. I've seen it. It can rock families back to life. It can move people to adopt. It can bring and hold marriages and families together. The power of love is real. And it can allow you to forgive someone when they don't deserve forgiveness. Dumbledore explains that it is a power. He says, love, the most mysterious subject studied in the Department of Mysteries, where it can be found, said Dumbledore, a room containing it that is kept locked at all times. It contains a force that is once more powerful, wonderful, more terrible than death, than human intelligence, than forces of nature. It is also perhaps the most mysterious of the many subjects for that study that reside there. It is the power held within that room that you possess in such quantities in which Voldemort has not at all. She's such a good writer. It was love that saved Harry, right? It was love that protects him. It was love that moves him to go and to die to himself as well, but to save his friends, to protect his friends, the people he loves. 1 Corinthians tells us it's a power as well. If I speak in tongues of men and angels but have not love, I'm just a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove these mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all that I have and deliver my body to be burned but have not love, I gain nothing. Man, that's so, so good. He's a good writer too, I think. That power you need. Otherwise, everything else is meaningless. Everything else doesn't make sense. And you've seen this in your life. You can have all the toys and gadgets, but have no one to share it with. It's not as fun, right? You can have a really sweet house and a sweet boat, but have a broken family that doesn't love each other. It's not that fun. If someone loves you, best feeling in the world, right? You can run through a brick wall. Have you ever felt that type of love? Paul goes on to say that love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things. I love this one. Hopes all things and endures all things. I see people loving people when they hope for people, not waiting for someone to stumble and say, I knew it. Actually hoping that someone succeeds is love. You're hoping all things. And that is the power of love that weaves all throughout the Harry Potter series. From his mother dying for Harry, to Ron sacrificing himself in the chess game in the first one, right? So that they could move forward. To Nicholas Flamel giving up the Sorcerer's Stone. He had eternal life, but he wanted Lord Voldemort to grab hold of it, and so he gives it up to be destroyed. That's death. Love is you before me. That's the ultimate form of love. We say love is death, love is dying to yourself, and it's you before me. And you know what this word is called? This theological truth that we're talking about here? That love is death, literal death. It's a big word called atonement. What atonement means is when God sees our sin, he doesn't just say, you know what? I love you anyways. You can come to heaven. What atonement means is I actually have to die for you. There actually has to be blood because of what you did. And so I will die for you. That is what love is. Hebrews 9:22 says, without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness of sins. All forgiveness is death. If you know someone who backstabbed you, you know this to be true. That if I were to love them and to forgive them, I have to die. And when you forgive someone, you harm yourself. You say, I'm giving up the right to demand justice because of what you've done to me, and I'm going to swallow that pain and that hurt. I'm going to die to forgive you. That's tough. I mean, forgiveness is tough when someone has hurt you like that. Absolutely. I mean, when I forgive, you suffer, you pay. You say, I can't hold it against him anymore. And you can say, yeah, I forgive you, and still hold it against him. I know we do that a lot, right? And say, yeah, no, it's fine. And we still hold it against people. Versus true forgiveness is saying, I will die. I will take this, and I will say, you know what? I will swallow that hurt, swallow that pain. And this is why I think Christianity gets such a bad rap. We say, no, Christianity is such a fluffy religion of love and forgiveness. But if anyone knows what real love is and real forgiveness is, that's hard. Christianity is hard. To actually love and to forgive is hard. Swallowing your pride, choosing to forgive someone, and to see someone not as a dementor, but as the lovely bride of Christ is difficult. But it's what he calls us to. That's real love. Because real love has scars, just like with Harry Potter. But it's not a lightning bolt. Real love has scars as well. These stories are so good, sometimes we forget how good the real story is. But that love actually has scars for you and me. And that's when Doubting Thomas said, let me see it. He still has it. He still has the scars, the proof that he loves you. That a point of immense suffering brings immense joy to us. That it's beautiful, and it's an image of you before me. But I think I love this quote. I think we think like Harry and say, yeah, love, so what? He says, so when the prophecy says that I'll have the power the dark lord knows not, it just means love, like, just love, that's the only power? And Harry feeling a little let down, yes, just love, said Dumbledore. Harry's looking for something better. Like, I want that secret power to just destroy Lord Voldemort. And the Dumbledore says, you have it. You have love. The secret power of love. And here's what I think is fascinating. I think the ending of the movies and the ending of the books is so controversial. Because it's kind of a letdown, right? I mean, on some level. You see Harry as an adult, and Ron's gotten a little chubbier. And Harry's just like a normal guy. He kind of lost the hero look. And he's like caring for his son, sending him off to Hogwarts himself. And it kind of loses some of the luster. It's like this, like, you defeated death, now go take on the world, whatever they mean. But J.K. Rowling says, I've known that all along, that was never the plan. To her, the most noble thing, the real bravery, is to rebuild after the trauma. A commentator said, some fans are disappointed that after all the adventures, Harry's greatest concern in the end is whether his son will fit in at Hogwarts. And she says, it's a bittersweet ending, but that's perfect. Because that's what happens to our heroes. We're human. I kept arguing that love is the most important force. Love is the most important force. And so I wanted to show him loving. And sometimes it's dramatic. It means you lay down your life. But sometimes it means making sure someone's trunk is packed and hoping they'll be okay at school. I love that. I mean, that's just the image of the monotonous love that we see every day. Caring for someone with their trunk is packed, ready to go to school. That your parents care for you in that way. Love is this daily sacrifice. And so I want to ask you, who can you love today? I mean, it's gonna hurt. Who can you die to yourself for? Who can you forgive today? It's literal death, right? It's a part of you, like, it hurts. But if you do it, be careful. You're dabbling in very powerful magic, right? It's very powerful magic that can actually rekindle a relationship and find friendship and love that you never thought was possible. Can you forgive like that? Not on your own power, not on your own will. The only way that you can forgive like that, the only way you can realize that is to realize that Jesus values you more than him. The only way you can love people like that is to see yourself as Malfoy. And to see that just like Dumbledore offered him grace, that God offers you grace. And so that you can now love and forgive people because you've been loved and forgiven. The king values the servant. The king, the one who needs to be served, gets down and serves the servant. And if you see yourself like a king or a queen, like all of us do, and say, serve me, and now you flip your head and say, I will serve you. That's tough, but that's what true love is. So I want us to rethink Dumbledore's words that we already heard earlier. You would be protected by an ancient magic of which he knows, which he despises, which he has always therefore underestimated to his cost. I am speaking, of course, of the fact that your mother died to save you. She gave you a lingering protection he never expected, a protection that flows in your veins to this day. I put my trust, therefore, in your mother's blood. You're protected by your mother's blood that works on your behalf, that works for you, that is in your veins this day. The love that died to save you. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you for revealing to us the power of love through these books of Harry Potter. Thank you for realizing, showing us what sacrificial love actually is, what atonement actually is, what imputed love actually is. These great theological truths in a beautiful, beautiful book. So Lord, we ask you to teach us what love is, and then give us the power to actually love people, to love the unlovables, because you've done that for us. Praise your heavenly name.